This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
The BFM Breakfast Grill, connecting you to the top people and ideas. Presented by U Mobile.
Good morning, you're listening to The Breakfast Grill. I'm Lynn Mark. And today I have with me on the line Datuk Azalina Othman Syed, Member of Parliament for Pengerang, as well as a formerly Minister in charge of Legal Affairs. Thank you very much for joining us this morning, Datuk Sri.
Thank you, Lynn. Thank you for giving me time, although all of us are under lockdown now.
Yes. So hopefully this has been a bit of a welcome distraction for you. So first of all, I'd like to get your gauge of the communication cohesiveness so far into the movement control order. I mean, there has been a criticism that the government's been slow to communicate policy with people on the ground or even within themselves. And you've had some thoughts on this.
Well, I think if you compare with the whole world, this is not something only happening in Malaysia. It's happening all over the world. If you look at Singapore, I mean, Singapore handled it quite well because you know very well Singapore is really considered quite small and it's very easy to maintain order and giving out instruction. But you compare to Italy, there's so thousands of deaths. And it's a huge country with a lot of people. And we are right smack in between of Asia and East Asia and Europe. And I think where the government is going, I believe that upon becoming a government by itself for Perikatan Nasional, these are immediate challenge for them. And I think they're trying their very best. And it looks quite all right because I think the first week people were a bit, uncomfortable and they were questioning a lot. But social media, rightly or wrongly, assisted a lot to understand how the world were handling it. And I think slowly people were accepting that this is something that happens in America, in United Kingdom, in European countries, in Australia. It's just basically the degree. And I think to be fair to any government of the day, and especially for PN government, I believe that they are themselves trying their very best to really make some adjustment in reference to the whole country. Yeah.
It's also not been a very easy few weeks for your constituency, Datuk Sri, because Pengerang not only has seen a few cases of COVID-19, you've also had to weather an explosion at the Petronas Rapid Oil Refinery on the same day that the movement control order was declared and lives were lost. This was the second fire in a year. So how are your constituents taking to all of the country's recent developments, you know, not just the COVID-19, but the MCO, and before that, this sudden change of government?
Yeah, and also I think we better not forget the fact that there is a new Menteri Besar, and everything happened at the same time. And fortunately for me, the first fire, I was an opposition member. Now with the second fire, I am a ruling party member. Sort of a shared power member or shared ideologies. But the fact that it is slightly better for me to communicate, and although I think Petronas is being fair, but because it's highly, it's a fire safety issue, and a lot of workers, if you come down, you can see the whole firecracker, the burning, it's ongoing. But what happened years ago when Barisan was ruling Johor, 10 kampung in the whole constituency, which is nearby, within a few kilometres, were moved out. Mm. There's only one kampung that's left. It's only 200, almost to 300 families. Those are the ones that I have to negotiate with the state government with 1,000 over acres to move them as the last leg. Because, you know, one thing about fire and oil and gas industry is not only the pollution of the fire, but the smell pollution, the noise pollution, leakages. So the people, those 200 to 300 people would be the next chapter that I would want to look at right after if the MQO has been withdrawn to look into that matter. The problem with the leakages is you can't tell when it will happen. And sometimes it's not many. It just happened because out of the situation or the environment. So what happens is that the people must be really protected. I hope with the parliamentary sitting, some hard questions can be raised on my part as a member of parliament for Pengerang to question the government now as to their steps and their procedures. And this is a very serious repercussion of huge businesses in oil and gas.
Of course. And Dato' Sri, you've also been very vocal about a number of issues. You've also taken to Twitter very recently to express, it felt like you're very much your dissatisfaction with how the Perikatan Nasional Coalition was made up. What has been the reception to that from the current parties in power?
I think a lot of people sort of misunderstand the angle I was aiming at. First things first, you have to understand any company joint venture, there's always a shared agreement. That's what you do, whether is it a reverse takeover or if it's a lateral takeover, you know, whatever kind of businesses you look at. So I give an analogy of any coalition government in any other country. And usually you start from ground zero, which is you have a shared ideologies and agreement. As far as we were concerned, to be very honest, it happened so fast. This is from the perspective of myself as a member of parliament for UMNO. It happened very fast. The sudden resignation of the seventh prime minister and the sudden inclusion of the MPs, and we were being brief about the existence of the processes, because you cannot deny the formation of any government is via constitution under Article 43. And you also cannot deny the role of the Yang di-Pertuan Agong. At this junction, everything was triggered by that resignation and the appointment of an interim prime minister. I mean, I don't understand really what happened or what transpired in that political party, which is Bersatu. But if the sitting prime minister resigned and then looks at into an interim prime minister pending a new prime minister to come in, by virtue, it cannot be given back to the same numbers, because you have to go back to the parliament, because legally, the people gave a mandate. Yes, everybody said, well, you know, we gave the election way back in PRE14. And then the question here is, within your party or your so-called Pakatan Harapan coalition, the processes that you do, but as far as we were concerned, there was a vacuum. And I think for us being a member of parliament, for me as UMNO and Barisan Nasional Party, we were called to have an audience with the king. And Article 43 was invoked and to ask us, who do we believe can command the majority? This is not about the party, but more about the MPs that has already been voted, because this is like a second phase. Mm-hmm. It's never happened before. I think basically what I wanted to do was that I was like trying to raise the point of a day late and a dollar short, in the sense of I wish there was an agreement before, so there would be a capacity of looking at various points of different policies, ideologies, and agreement. That is what I wanted. It's not that I was being an academician. I just wanted to raise that by saying that it would be really great that there was something to look at.
Yeah. And of course, this still hasn't been any kind of manifesto put forward by Perikatan Nasional, yeah, understandably, yeah, because they have perhaps been distracted by the coronavirus outbreak. But behind the scenes, you know, have these kind of discussions been taking place to try and bridge the gap of understanding between the current coalition parties?
I really don't know, because the leadership of the party takes this ball of negotiating. But myself, being myself, continuously vocal, I keep reminding my members of the parliament every time there's a group chat, you know, I keep asking this question and nobody's sort of really answering me directly. But I'm pressuring for it. You know, I'm requesting that get me involved if there's an agreement to look at it. You know, let us sit together as the other members of parliament who... basically, there are like, you know, the front bench is like 70, taking into account the senators' numbers. You talk about the opposition, which suppose assuming is 92. You're talking about the back benches, which is really small compared to the front bench. And if you are the front bench, which is you're the minister, deputy minister, in parliament, you present policies, legislature, you answer questions on policies. You can't really aggressively debate because you're the quorum of the front bench. And right now, our numbers are really small compared to the front bench. So we're supposed to be continuously defending policies. So any government that wants to look at survival of their coalition party government is don't forget the backbenchers. Because you, like a single party government whereby we were in Barisan Nasional way back since independence, almost 60 over years, we are able to only have a single party. So the policy of the cabinet goes to the party goes back to policy. So the communication was so simple. But here, you have got more than how many parties with different ideologies. You talk about Bersatu, came up from UMNO. And at the same time, PAS has been with UMNO, but left UMNO, came back to UMNO. And then you've got MCA, and then you've got MIC, you got the Sabah, Sarawak parties. And you look at the formation, the ideologies are really, really different. Mm. So the question here is for the MPs, the backbenchers, to defend. We must be able to have an opinion on what is our shared ideologies. Even Pakatan Harapan went for election on PRU14, right? And they were from day one decided to be partners because they had one common enemy, one MDB, say for example, giving a narrative of example. They sat together. So even that, they had so much difficulty in moving and shuffling a lot of points because sometimes maybe the ideologies are really different, but how they make a decision and they seem to be so tight, but still they were loose. And here we are coming in from the premise of, you know, a shared agreement or ideology or policy, and there's nothing written. And I've been emphasizing so much, I want it to be written because I want, as an MP for Pengerang, to have a say. As a Ketua UMNO Bahagian for Pengerang, I want to have a say. As a Supreme Council member, I want to have a say. And this is who I am. I mean, if you don't like what I do, it's too bad. But my responsibility is for my people of Pengerang. Because the people are also asking me the same question. What are the policies on certain way forward that the government is going to make a decision on?
I'm speaking with Datuk Sri Azalina Othman Said, Member of Parliament for Pengerang, as well as former Law Minister. Next up, we'll be speaking about Datuk Sri Azalina's own trajectory from the Cabinet to the backbench. So be sure to stay tuned to BFM 89.9.
You are listening to the BFM Breakfast Grill, brought to you by U Mobile.
BFM 89.9, you're listening to The Breakfast Grill, where I'm speaking with Datuk Sri Azalina Othman Said, Member of Parliament for Pengerang, as well as former Minister in charge of Legal Affairs. Now, earlier, Datuk Sri, we were talking about the importance of the backbench to a government. But now my question for you is, would you rather have preferred a position on the front bench instead of the backbench? So you are a former cabinet minister and you're a four-time MP. You're more than qualified. So some would question why it was that you weren't offered a cabinet position.
Well, I think it's just like describing the CEO of a company, prerogative of the prime minister. I think you look at Boris Johnson, you know, he had that council for his, he had this, the Exchequer was quite close to him. And he decided to change the Exchequer for the deputy. I mean, that's the prerogative. You look at the British Parliament, the front bench, you have Theresa May sitting behind. I mean, these are what democracy and civilized nation is all about. You must respect the prerogative or the discretion of the Prime Minister. It's his cabinet. And if he believes that these are personality that can that he believes can carry his vision, that is his responsibility to make that decision. Whether the public will buy into his decision will only be translated at the general election, for example.
Now I'd like to turn your attention to women's and children's issues, because you've been a consistent advocate for children's rights and women's rights as well. Do you agree with the current Prime Minister's choice for who to place in the women's ministry? You've been critical, for example, of the Deputy Women's Minister, that of Siti Zailah Mohamed Yusof, who came out to make comments to the effect of existing child legislation would remain if they don't go against Islamic teachings. So what is your sense of the current makeup of the women's ministry?
Well, I think to be very, very fair, I don't know whether internally there was briefing on the part of the government officers. I don't know whether they really guided them on the policy, because you must remember, any good policies that was brought by the Pakatan Harapan government, in my personal opinion, must carry by the Perikatan National Government in reference to issues, for example, right? For example, affecting women and children. Let's talk about when I came out with the Sexual Offences Act for Children, the 2017 Act, where I keep writing to the then Deputy Prime Minister. The government did not revoke the law. The government continued. The new government continued the law. So now, if this is the eighth Prime Minister's government, I believe that they must look into sensitive laws. That should be their obligation to the women in Malaysia. They must be able to be brave enough to carry at cabinet meeting to look into good laws that was brought by the Pakatan Harapan government or discussion. For example, Sexual Harassment Act, Gender Equality Act. Let's talk about expanding and empowering the Sexual Offences Against Children Act, assisting the new law minister to make sure there are special court for children, to make sure the prosecutors and the judges have got specialised knowledge, halfway house for victims and dependencies, to look into definition of grooming. And that's why anyone who sits in a position of minister must be able to continue to engage with INGOs, international NGOs, civil society, because being a minister is not a solo act. You know, you're not representing yourself. You are carrying the face of the government. And to do that, you must be able to continuously listen to the voices out there. And the women voices today in Malaysia are very loud voices. I mean, you put anyone in that shoes, whoever the person is, whether you had the former Deputy Prime Minister or now you have a new minister, whether a married minister or a single minister or whatever you call it, that minister in any shoes, when he talks about the women's issue, must carry the issues to be forward and must be able to be brave about it. Because you're dealing with sensitive issue, especially when you talk about the roadmap about child marriages. That is an extreme sensitive topic between Muslims and non-Muslims because of the separation of the offences of Islamic law as compared to the criminal offences in Malaysia. So basically what I'm trying to say is that you can never have a solo act. So I'm not criticising them by saying they have a solo act. No, I don't think so, because the COVID-19 basically gave a big pause of them maybe sitting in or moving forward, because I don't have any knowledge. But they must be able to continuously engage. That is what I was trying to emphasize so much.
But the issue here, I guess, Dato' Sri, is that Tan Sri Muhyiddin Yassin has come out to of course, say that it's not the personal beliefs that are important, but the government stance. But to what extent, as someone who has been in cabinet and been in a legislative-making position before, to what extent do personal beliefs influence the policies that ministers decide to carry forward?
That's why when you sit down for cabinet meeting, you must be able to sit there and convince them that this is also not your personal belief, or if assuming you've already negotiated and understood issues raised by NGOs or INGOs, you bring it forward and you make discussion. Even for me, when I was trying to pass some new laws as the Minister for Law, even for that almost only 2 years, been in a position of 2.5 years, there was a lot of negotiation being made to the not only the front bench, but also the back benches and also the opposition members. I remember, for example, the Lembah Pantai MP then, which was Nurul Wiza. I remembered Peto from Penang. They were continuously engaging on me on certain laws, continuously harassing me. I mean, when we were in parliament, we were always, not only there was a formal argument in Dewan Rakyat itself, but also outside. We were being civilized. We were agreeing to disagree to agree. And we were all friends. And we were talking and making each other understand what issues are out there. And all the those who become front bench is an opportunity to be able to continue that discourse and that discussion. Because the whole paradox of a coalition government is the concept of balancing between the cabinet meeting and balancing outside cabinet meeting. So again, I'm emphasizing you cannot be a solo act. And I think that that's basically what the Prime Minister is trying to emphasize, that you are representing the country, representing government. Now, if assuming her party itself, for example, passes a different opinion, they have to take to discuss in the cabinet meeting by giving their reasons. And the other ministers must also join in the discussion and give their views. But what I'm trying to emphasize is that you cannot be there and you decide to just, well, you know, I think it's good to just, you know, play safe and do what I'm told to do. Because you are the highest personality in the country. Out of the hundreds of MPs, you are being given the opportunity to become a minister, you're given the opportunity to lead. So you have to lead. You must take that risk to lead. And that is what you talk about leadership, taking that risk. And historically, it's been proven. A lot of politicians goes up and go down. Today, you're in. Today, you're out. And we have the 7th Prime Minister who was the 4th Prime Minister because he believed in a certain principle and the people gave him the mandate. So now you got the 8th Prime Minister because the MPs gave him the mandate. He, I believe, must also listen to all the MPs. Even if the cabinet can make certain policy decisions, as long as if the 8th Prime Minister, is opening up his discussion to us as the backbenchers. I believe the government can sustain and maintain itself. But the minute the government decides to do a solo act, say, for example, with various political parties with different ideologies, then you're going to see a lot of cracks coming in. But that's basically the call of the 8th Prime Minister.
So, Dato' Sri, now as the law minister who did push through the Sexual Offences Against Children's Act and who was a consistent voice for these issues, what do you think should be the priorities for the Women's Ministry moving forward if Brigada Nasional continues for the next 2 years until GE15?
I think it has to be phase by phase. Right now, it really has to look at the with the MCO order, right? The lockdown. Mm-hmm. They have to look at the vulnerable groups. I think I'm extremely concerned. If you look at all the social media posting from different parts of the world, domestic violence is one of the highest. And in Philippines, say, for example, you know, there was a lot of violence happening in families, within families, because of the small confined area. And therefore, when the Talian Kasi was so-called being notified that it's going to be on a stand down, people were jumping up and down because that was only, that's what a lot of people felt was the communication channel capable of the vulnerable groups. So if you talk about these challenges of the lockdown situation, say for example, that would be your priority looking at. This is what I would look at, you know, if I was looking at the vulnerable sectors of society. But nevertheless, if the government wants to continue on the so-called 2 years or 3 years, again, I mentioned, whatever good by the Pakatan Harapan's legal policy in reference to women and children, the existing government must be fair enough and big-hearted enough to understand that these are good changes being brought forward. And do a study and call them in or basically call all the INGOs and NGOs in and talk about it, look into the requirement. The biggest sensitive issue would be the roadmap to fight child marriages. That is going to be really, really challenging. Again, look at all the sensitive laws, you know, the Sexual Harassment Act. Everybody's very upset with that. Gender equality, everybody's jumping up and down. These are very, very sensitive laws. But it has to be looked into because the country's progressing. Women out there, they are a big, huge chunk of contribution to the economic growth. Women out there, they are really, really clever. I mean, I've seen a lot of women who are in Malaysia who are well-respected worldwide, international consultants. Bring them in. Rope them in. And these are people who are thinkers. They are brains. They are able to come up with a lot of great ideas. And then once you agree, you let the politician do the marketing for you. You know, it's just basically we politicians are going down, making a lot of people understand. But I believe that the minister, especially anyone who's in charge, not only about women's ministry, but ministries affecting women and family, for example, the law minister in charge of the courts, in charge of the legislature in parliament, the law minister must also equally be extremely open-minded and not judgmental. And must also be at the same time able to monitor and to carry out progressive changes for the country.
Well, thank you very much for speaking with us this morning, Dato' Sri. It's been a pleasure hearing your insights.
Thank you so much, Lynn, for giving me the opportunity. And I hope you enjoy the rest of the lockdown days with your team. Stay safe and stay strong.
Likewise to you, Dato' Sri. I've been speaking with Dato' Sri Azalina Othman Said, Member of Parliament for Pengerang and former Law Minister. This has been The Breakfast Grill. I'm Lynn Mark for The Morning Run, PFM 89.9.
The Breakfast Grill is brought to you by U Mobile, unleashing unlimited potential every day.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.